ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When energy costs jump, everyone feels it. At the Bowser, on the power bill, and across the economy.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. On ABC Business Daily's Fuelcast, we break down the latest in fuel, energy, and the forces driving prices.
It's a quick, clear update on what's moving, why it matters, and what it can mean for your wallet and the wider economy.
Find Fuelcast in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
The men's FIFA World Cup will be underway within days. So, what should we expect, with most of the matches being held in Trump's America? Today, Tracy Holmes, host of the Sports Ambassador podcast, breaks down the money and politics around the biggest World Cup ever staged and ponders what could possibly go wrong. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Tracy, the USA, Canada and Mexico, they were selected to host the FIFA Men's World Cup back in 2018 during Trump's first term. And well, 7 years later, well, a lot of things have changed, haven't they?
They certainly have. And if you think about the bids that they put forward, the slogan of that bid was United 2026. What we have at the moment is anything but.
Yes.
We know that there are travel problems, immigration problems, a full travel ban for 19 countries, a partial travel ban for 19 others. And I suppose, most of all, this affects the fans of teams that have qualified, such as Iran, Haiti, the Ivory Coast and Senegal.
Wow, yeah. And let's face it, people might be somewhat wary of actually travelling to the United States right now.
Yes, a lot of people are extremely wary. And I think, you know, as far as the US officials go, they probably don't mind that. Mm. FIFA, on the other hand, they do mind that because they were looking at pulling in the biggest audience ever for what is essentially the biggest FIFA World Cup ever. For the first time, 48 nations have qualified.
Yeah, okay. Well, before we sort of get to the politics of all of this, why don't we consider that the economics? As you say, this is the biggest World Cup ever staged. So what does that actually mean, though?
You're talking about 104 matches in 16 cities across three different countries and different time zones in 39 days. Mm. And I suppose if you look at the security overlay required for that, we know the USA has a stressed out aviation system. So you've got a situation where if one flight, let's say, is delayed in Atlanta, meaning the team cannot fly to their next destination, it has an impact on probably 200 other flights across the USA. Suddenly you've got 5,000 people who are not planning on spending a night in a particular city, now looking for accommodation and alternative travel routes on another day. So it's much more than a football game.
Oh my gosh, yes. It's huge. It's massive. It's complicated. But the thing is, the governing body, FIFA, it stands to make a huge amount of money out of it, doesn't it?
It does. FIFA is the sort of overall association of associations. Mm. So the members are made up of 211 national associations. Money from FIFA is distributed to each of those member nations. Mm. There's a couple of different programs. FIFA Forward is one, which is development money. So the money they make from the FIFA World Cup, which happens only once every 4 years, then goes to these associations to help them develop for the future. Now, when it gets to each of these national associations, the checks and balances might not always be there, and just how the money is spent or was meant to be spent might not always happen. But this is, you know, every big organisation faces the same challenges.
Mm, all right. Well, FIFA itself is projecting revenue of over $11 billion, so it is massive. Now, of course, the ticket costs, they're causing a bit of a stir.
Ticket prices for the tournament have risen significantly compared to the last World Cup 4 years ago in Qatar.
Authorities in two US states have subpoenaed FIFA over its ticketing practices. There are also concerns the governing body's use of what's called variable pricing has drastically inflated prices.
At one point, there was a $2 million World Cup final ticket up for grabs on a resale platform, although, of course, the head of FIFA thought that was a bit of a joke. You know, he said, I'll buy you a Coke and hot dog if you actually buy it.
Number one, it doesn't mean that the tickets cost $2 million. Number two, it doesn't mean that somebody will buy these tickets. Actually, if somebody buys a ticket for the final $2 million, I will personally bring him a hot dog and a Coke to make sure that he has a great experience.
But tell me what's going on with the tickets.
Well, yes, incredibly expensive. And we know that the way the ticket operations work in the US, and an absolute majority of the matches are being played in the US, a few in Canada, a few in Mexico. Mm. But the tickets went on sale in December, prices ranging from about $140 up to, you know, heading towards $9,000. This is all in US prices.
Yes.
And then when they released their second tranche in April, they had gone up again by a couple of $1,000s. But this is part of the dynamic model that they have that operates in the USA for major events. The other thing they have is that FIFA decided, you know, second or third tier agencies could get involved in the resale. Rather than that happening and these agencies making money, FIFA said, we'll do it. We'll be the resale agent as well, so that any extra money that can be done with this dynamic pricing then goes back to FIFA.
All right, well, why don't we leave the economics there and the ticket prices? Everyone can Google that if they want to go, I suppose. But let's consider the politics of all this, Tracy, because as we know, football is not just about sport. Now, Donald Trump, he has really been cozying up to the FIFA president, hasn't he? Also, of course, FIFA did award him the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize last year.
A beautiful medal for you that you can wear everywhere you want to go.
Well, thank you very much. This is truly one of the great honors of my life.
Not quite the peace prize that he wanted, but wow.
Look, I think this is such an interesting scenario to really bury down into. So if you put yourself into Gianni Infantino's shoes, he's the president of FIFA and probably, you could argue, the most powerful person in world sport. And that does come with a lot of power. So with the Peace Prize, everybody knows Donald Trump was after the Peace Prize, or so it's alleged.
Yes.
He was not going to get that. Now, Gianni Infantino is watching the world unravel. He knows he's got the biggest event ever about to happen. What can he do to try and guarantee that the president of the US, which can behave quite erratically at times, to keep him with a single mission of making this event a success?
Mm.
I know, we'll give him a peace prize.
Yes.
Now, the outcry from that is well documented and many people have their views. But seriously, there's no such thing as a FIFA Peace Prize. It was invented to keep Donald Trump on side and on focus to get to the deadline and the end line of a FIFA World Cup.
Wow, yeah. And Gianni Infantino, he's kind of continued that trend, if you like. He presented Donald Trump with the World Cup itself in the Oval Office.
We brought as well this, which is the winner's trophy.
Mm.
Only the FIFA president, presidents of countries, and then those who win can touch it, because it's for winners only. And since you are a winner, of course, you can as well.
Can I keep it?
For you.
This is really, isn't it, Tracy, the entwining of sport and politics?
Well, you can't have sport at this level without politics.
Uh-huh.
So you cannot separate sport and politics. They've always been intertwined. The only thing sport can do is try to hold on to this value, if you want to call it that, of political neutrality. What they can do is try and find a way that the country or the team representing the politics of that nation can actually come and compete in friendly terms with teams representing the politics of many other nations. And that's a very difficult thing to achieve.
And of course, this World Cup, it comes with the war in Iran, still not resolved. And there has been a lot of confusion over whether the Iranian team will come or it won't come to the United States. Trump has gone from saying they're welcome, but they shouldn't come. Then he says they are welcome to come, they should come. It's been very confusing.
It's very confusing. I think Iran had every intention of coming because, again, they can use this platform. They also don't want to forego the $11 million US dollars they'll get just for arriving to compete in the tournament. So what's happened is that Donald Trump has said, yes, you can compete. They've changed their base camp from Arizona to just over the Mexican border in Tijuana. They'll be busing in with a day pass for their two games in Los Angeles. They'll then have to fly to their third game. This is the sort of underbelly of world sport that people don't see. All of these discussions happen 24/7 in the months and days leading up to tournaments like this.
Yeah, but can the Iranian team's safety actually be guaranteed at this point, do you think?
There's a couple of ways of looking at that. The Iranian team's safety will come under the proviso of the security network that is being put as an overlay across the tournament. The other thing to remember is that the biggest population of Iranians outside Iran is actually in Los Angeles, where two of these games will be played by the Iran team. We know that that population, many of them have plans of turning up with a flag that is essentially banned by FIFA because it's seen as political. It is the flag that was used pre the revolution. So there's all of this tension playing out as well. So it's not just the security of the team, it's also the security of the fans and those who may want to use the moment to prosecute their own agenda, hoping and praying for a different Iran. And we know that sometimes those tensions can flare.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and human rights groups, they claim this whole event will be a bonanza of sports washing, that it will be used as a tool to cover up human rights abuses. Of course, there's also concern, Tracy, about ICE agents turning up at venues. So there's a lot going on here.
There's a lot going on. Human rights, I don't like to use the term sports washing because, you know, usually we apply it to countries that don't have the same sort of politics as we do, who are each wrestling with their own societies and dynamics. No country yet is perfect. When we have a perfect country, let's hope all sports events are held there. But until then, it's probably a good idea to try and share it around. And in some ways, at least when the tournament begins, we have brought the world together in a single point, and we hope that every nation competing and every fan watching gets to celebrate something in an otherwise tense world.
Do you think really that is what it still does, though? I mean, it's a nice way to think about sport, but is that the ultimate result?
I think anyone who's been to a FIFA World Cup or has been to an Olympic Games or any of these major events does go away feeling quite motivated, feeling inspired, just watching what these athletes do despite everything that is swirling around them. And it's a moment where the rest of us can sort of pause and have a look at that and decide whether the world is a better place for having done it or not. And I ask myself that question after every major event, and I still have the same answer every single time. The world is a better place for having major events like the FIFA World Cup and the Olympic Games, even if it is only to provide a forum where we can have these discussions, where we can start wrestling with some of the bigger issues in the world and how we solve them. But, you know, there's only two places the world comes together. That is the United Nations and major sporting events. And the United Nations, that's turned into some sort of a parliamentary gallery where all people do is throw accusations at the other side. Sport still comes together in mostly friendly terms. And we do see athletes from around the world and officials from around the world predominantly living in harmony.
Yeah, all right. And with 5 billion viewers around the world, well, it still draws a huge television crowd, Tracy.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. If everyone had lost hope or had lost any kind of interest in this, there wouldn't be those audiences. There wouldn't be sponsors lining up to provide millions of dollars in sponsorship money or in-kind or prize money. We'd see the end of it already. And we don't see that ending. it's difficult, and I think that organisations like FIFA and the IOC have big challenges ahead of them to remain relevant and to be able to remain a place where this can happen, where they can lay claim to what cynical journalists, maybe people like you and me, will often say, oh, as if, you know, world peace, harmony, bringing the world together. But for a short time and for a moment in time, that does still happen, and I think a lot of people do take some value from that.
Tracy Holmes is the host of the Sports Ambassador podcast. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.